Hello, this is Victor Nyauchi, listening to Clubhouse and Podcast.
Not that cricket. It is the Clubhouse End podcast, and it is 2 days before the qualifier that's happening in Kenya. My name is Larry Kwederai, and broadcasting, sound goes back to my radio days. I don't know why I say it goes back to my radio days, because I haven't officially quit radio. There's a possibility I could go back to radio in like 2013, Dandy Chipo type things. So I'm here with two gentlemen. We have been on this podcast before, and I've been so kind as to say they will join me for this very first episode in as far as the series that is going to be focusing on the Zimbabwe men's team that is out at the qualifier out in Kenya. Zimbabwe are forced into this qualifier because, first of all, when they could have qualified for the 2024 T20 World Cup, during the 2022 World Cup, should have beaten Netherlands and should have beaten Bangladesh, won one of those matches, they're through to that qualifier, to the World Cup. Then they get knocked out by Uganda in 2023. Then they win only two matches this year, finishing in top 12, but the United States made it into the Super 8, so that means Zimbabwe have to go to a qualifier. But not just any qualifier, it's a sub-regional B qualifier. That means it's the qualifier before the qualifier. Now, starting with you, darling Tama Tambanaze, and also thank you for joining Tinashe Chimbambo. This is strange territory, and it's one of those where you're like, okay, you're playing the number one team in the world, hosting them for a bilateral in July, and playing Seychelles on the 19th of October.
Yeah, it is a strange one. No, thank you for having me again today, Larry, but it's... My feeling is that it's something you've created yourself, so it's your bed, you lie in it. And again, it's just the inability to finish off weaker sides when the opportunities have arisen has created this problem. But I do think that you're going to be playing Seychelles, Kenya, Rwanda. And I do think that it's important that Zimbabwe gets it right there. It's difficult to play associates, really, really difficult, because what often, especially T20, two good players in a side can actually make a very, very big difference in a shortened game. If you have one good batter at the top of the order or a couple of bowlers, can make it very, very difficult. But I can't really see Zimbabwe not qualifying, getting through this stage without any difficulties.
Tinashe, how did we get here? I mean, we know the sides of it, should have beaten so-and-so, should have done that. Is this a combination of... we never fixed 2018. I'm just guessing. Didn't qualify. Then 2023, earlier, didn't qualify. Again, didn't qualify. Not all those matches, like you said, against associate teams. Like, what is it that went wrong?
I think from the look back at 2018, how we got to 2018, and how we handled 2018, you see that we have not changed mentality-wise in the way that we played in 2018 and the way we want to play against weaker sides when we played in 2018. And like what Darlington is just alluded to, you don't want to make games against lower-ranked sides competitive, because then when they get a sniff and they have one or two players who can have a good day and they actually go on and have a good day, it becomes very difficult. So it's a case of constant decline in the way we think as a test-playing nation. Are we still thinking that we are elite? Are we still elite? Can we still go out there and perform in an elite way that shows the difference between a top-10 test-ranked team and the rest of the associates? Because nowadays, the world is an open oyster. You have a guy who has played for India under-19s playing for, you know, Kenya. It's possible. and that person will not be, you know, just any Mickey Mouse player. They actually know their game, and they would have looked for opportunities elsewhere because they can't get opportunities where they are from. So you always have your UAEs having one or two decent players that they played for Pakistan under 19 or Pakistan A, but because of the way that the world has become right now with immigration, you find that most teams are starting to balance up.
And you say that, I'm just agree with you on that point. The fact a lot of people were like Zimbabwe lost against Afghanistan and used to be something that people used to beat Zimbabwe. Then South Africa, of course, Afghanistan is no longer an associate, goes first bilateral, lost the first bilateral series against Afghanistan. So I think it's one thing that I remember when we won the qualifier in Bulawayo. There was something that Dave Houghton said. He said, we need to get away from playing against these smaller countries, because once they suck you in, it's difficult to get back up again. And to a certain extent, would you think, Darlington, that it's predicated on if they feel that they can beat you, then therefore on that day, there's no aura of invincibility that they have?
To be fair, I don't think all those failures to qualify, I don't think that Zimbabwe played their best cricket. Okay. And I think that if Zimbabwe plays their best cricket through this, they'll qualify easily. Okay. And that's the thing. And often, having, say, a strong side opposing you makes it easier for you to get into the frame of mind that allows you to play your best cricket. And somehow you've got to figure out how to do that. They've got to figure out how to do that while they're in Kenya now. Because again, Kenya's got a long history. They're good enough as a side to figure out how to get a win. You know what I mean? And so it's just that idea that you've just got to mentally tune yourself in so that you actually play your best cricket. And I also think, allowing associates for me to bat first is a bad idea. Largely because once they've got runs on the board and they've got an idea what it's clear what they've got to do once they've got runs on the board. But if you get into the habit of getting in bat first, post 200 plus scores, I think it's a lot more complicated to chase 200 than it is to defend a score around 130, 140. You know what I mean? So what you do is every time you set the bar low, just low enough that they can think that we can do this. Especially if you're winning the toss and making those sides bad first.
So, could this also come from the fact that Zimbabwe plays very little domestic T20 cricket? At the highest level, it's generally like a week, isn't it? And then the only other thing you have is the NPL. If you look at South Africa, there's the CSA T20 Challenge, there's also provincial T20s, there's all sorts of other tournaments that are T20. Could it be a case where game management for a lot of our players could be an issue? That Zimbabwe, for its ability as a test play nation, is the only one besides, I think, Ireland, that do not have a centurion in T20 cricket. But you've even got smaller countries that got a centurion in T20 cricket. So simple things like that. Could that be caused by the fact that even when you now go to playing, you know, T20 cricket on the continent and elsewhere, why you're not able to convert like you're talking about is because you just don't play enough of the format in any way, shape or form?
Of course, Larry, and you would know this, experience is the best teacher, and I don't think our players are experiencing an array of situations in the field for them to understand how to deal with those. You look at T20 mercenaries that are playing around the world, your Klassens, your Chris Gayles, your whoever who are playing test cricket, T20 cricket right now. Those guys are constantly being challenged in different conditions, different personnel, different levels of attacks, and they get to a point where they understand their game so much that nothing is ever lost until the game is finished. In situations where we have a second Araza at the crease, you know, you find even the most dire of situations can become lively. Why? Because Raza is playing in the Bangla T20. He's in the IPL. He was recently in the 100. He will be in the Caribbean. Perhaps you get lucky and get into the SA20. But his level of competition is always increasing and increasing and getting more challenges around different circumstances. And he's finding ways to deal with those. You know, look at everybody else around that team who is getting close to as much cricket. Not many people. Maybe Ngarava is getting to bowl a little bit. He's getting calls up to the Bangla. Maybe he'll get opportunities again in some other smaller T20 leagues. But I don't think there is anything that the players can do if they are not playing enough. They need to play enough domestically. They need to get more competition domestically. The way that the T10 has come up with things like, you know, T10, you have many players, even those that are not in their prime, but coming here, bringing their experience, sharing that in the changing room, teaching players how to deal with different situations. If that happens at T20 level, we have two or maybe three different leagues. One that involves international players, one that involves our own players, and the one that we already have with the NPL. That gives a pathway of how you want your international performers to progress. At the moment, the bar is just slightly too short. You come from playing NPL and then you must go play, you know, international. You know, that's a big jump, and that can never happen easily. That's why you see that the consistency at that level will always be up and down. There is no a real upward trajectory there, because the level of competition is just two things apart.
I guess, I mean, look, on that part where they say from NPL to international, I think that the one aberration was when they had Nick Welsh go from NPL and went to international, and we all know how that turned out. And I think from the interview with the selector, David Nteren, convener of selectors, is like, yeah, they're not going to pick players from NPL going straight to the national team. But, I mean, your opinion on that? Because it's all very well to say players go and get a lot of experience outside. But for Henrik Claassen to end up getting picked for the national team is because he's got a huge body of work domestically. And it's also then, if he's seen as having a huge body of work, because if you look at it, domestic T20, there's like six matches that you play per season or something like that, if you get to the final. And is that enough for a player every season? And bear in mind that the national team is going to be selected on the basis, partly on the basis of those performances in those six matches. Unless, of course, you're one of those players that, you know, Raza might not be available for a domestic T20, but will, because of his repertoire, he will be picked for the national team.
Oh, I'm going to start by answering. I think the Nick Welsh thing, I think it was a good idea. I think the intention was correct. Is you find somebody who's in form and you try and create an opportunity for that form. Hopefully you think it translates. Okay. But clearly it doesn't translate. And as a result, I think the best performer in this year's NPL was Jaden Schadendorf. He didn't get that same, I'd almost call it a free pass. And I also think it's a good thing. It's unfortunately, maturity as a cricketing nation comes from make the mistakes that we make more than from the things that we get right. You know, we make mistakes and then we correct those mistakes. And I think you mentioned that interview with David Ntendeta. I think it's important to have those very, very clear pathways. And I also do agree that probably you'd want to double the number of T20s that Zimbabweans are playing every year domestically. So instead of having maybe just one round of provincial T20, look to one at the beginning of the season and then one at the end of the season. And then that's the big event, the one at the end of the season. But you have, like, say, you play T20 at home and then T20 away. And then you have the final either at here at Harare Sports Club with the Underlights or at Queens in Bulawayo, because those are two big grounds. But I think something like that actually makes a lot more sense. But to be also quite critical, Sikander Raza became a superstar playing under those conditions. Okay. Mm-hmm. Throughout my experience with him, he's always been the sort of person you can go and have a conversation about things like this with. You know what I mean? How does Sikandar Raza, how was he able to make that leap from not enough cricket to actually breaking into the big time? I think that's a very important question that a lot of the Zimbabwe cricketers have to ask him. You have to have that conversation because he's there and he's available. And as I said, my experience with him says that you ask him a question, he's willing to answer. So I think it's something that each of the individual players has to actually work out for themselves, because yes, to say that we don't play enough T20s is probably correct. Okay. But what I consider champions and superstars are the guys who win against the trend, not the guys who win because of the trend. You know what I mean? And if we're going to go and win in Kenya, Zimbabwe's going to win in Kenya, I think it's going to be against the trend. Because the trend has traditionally in the recent past been that Zimbabwe gets messed up by associates in competitions like this.
But my question would be, for me, the definition of innovation is not the product. It's creating a system that can be replicated. So do you want to be trying to keep replicating outliers? Because other countries are not creating outliers. So it's all very well to say for Zimbabwe, we'd like to get our players going out there playing in different leagues. But isn't Zimbabwe cricket's job, and we're just going to go through this before we then focus on Zimbabwe, the qualifier. Zimbabwe cricket's job to make the cricket within Zimbabwe as attractive as possible, as highly competitive as possible, as a higher a standard as possible, such that even players from outside Zimbabwe be like, I want to go and have a stint there playing T20. Yes, they come here for red ball cricket, but they'll be like, no, I want to go and have a stint playing T20 cricket, even if it's in their domestic cricket. Shouldn't that be more the focus to say, how do you develop the domestic product and make it at such a higher level that when you're jumping from that to the Zimbabwe A to Zimbabwe whatever, you can see the quality of the South Africa A player is a lot more refined because of the amount of cricket they play. And give an example, say Jaiswal, the number of T20 matches he's played already is more than a lot of the players that have been playing for the last 10 years for Zimbabwe. So that's just, isn't that an area of that should be of concern for Zimbabwe cricket? So like, how do we make playing in Zimbabwe more attractive so that we can produce the highest value?
Yes, and I think that's a question that, you know, many cricket fans will have. Many cricket fans have been asking that. Many cricket fans have been calling for players, Zimbabwean linked players from all over the world to come back and play and to come back and find some way of contributing to our game's growth locally. And the question, I don't have that answer, Larry, as to how do we make it attractive enough. But what we can all agree on right now is it's not attractive enough. You know, there is players that are in their prime either in South Africa, Botswana, surrounding countries, UK.
No, but what I'm talking about is less of an external solution.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the production of a certain level of quality of player,
yes,
who is from here. So I'm not worried about who's decided to make their lifestyle there.
Yeah,
definitely. You have players, let's say, give an example for Marumani.
Yeah.
Marumani, is he the best that he could have been given how much exposure he has, or is there a different story?
I'm going to jump in there. Sorry,
yeah.
Tinashe.
Yeah, that's okay.
I had a conversation. I can't tell you his name because we had this conversation in private, but with a former Zimbabwe cricketer a few weeks ago. And he says, you know, Darlington, a lot of these kids are leaving $2 or $3 million on the table. Those were his exact words. And I was like, what do you mean? It's like, you know, there's all these leagues around the world and whatnot. And a lot of them are just like you getting it clear in your mind that this is what I want to do. So you go and, because the only way you're going to get invited to a lot of those leagues is success for Zimbabwe. The only way you're going to get invited to play for Zimbabwe is success at provincial level. Okay. And so you've got to make a decision where you say, well, this is what I'm going to do. Okay, and I'm going to make it happen. And yes, while I do think that Zimbabwe cricket has a responsibility to try and create an environment that enables that, I think a lot of the times players don't actually take that personal responsibility to say, well, you know what, this is my career. And most cricket careers are finite. You know, like a lot of guys, by the time they're in their mid-30s, can't play competitive cricket. So if you're 23 or 24, you've essentially got a 10-year career. And what this former Zimbabwe cricket was saying is essentially you could go and earn maybe $200,000, $250,000 a year just playing leagues. And it's your responsibility, because ultimately it's your money that you're leaving on the table. And the way he said it, he says, you're leaving, these kids are leaving this money on the table. Because if I was 23 or 24 now, there's no way you'd keep me out of those leagues. Because he understood that it's personal responsibility. There's work that Zim Cricket could do. But don't wait for Zim Cricket to do the work.
You got to do the work yourself as well. So now we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about the qualifier itself.
Hi, it's Alex Lees here, Durham cricketer, and you're listening to Clubhouse End podcast.
So we're back, and we're talking about the qualifier that's taking place in Kenya. Hoping that, you know, now in the background, the players that have been chosen for the qualifier. Let me just go through these qualifiers. You listen to the Clubhouse Here podcast, myself, Larry, Queen, and I, together with Dalton and Matamana's International Shimbambo. Both first-class cricketers have played at a really high level, and are you still playing club cricket, or you're now moving to club coaching?
I'm going to be coaching at Uprising Cricket Club this year. So, apparently I'm on their players roster as well, but I doubt that I'm going to play this year.
I mean, I'm sure, you know, when you get a little bit older, the batting is not so much of an issue. It's the fielding, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's just, it's easier to direct traffic than actually be caught up in the middle of it.
And, Tinashe?
Well, I love the game so much, and I feel like my body can still take a few overs out there. I think my real problem is I still love wicketkeeping, and that's my Achilles heel, because my body can't take 50 overs of squatting anymore. But if I find a team that can accept me without needing me to wear the gloves, I'll definitely be playing.
Well, Takashinga had you there for the NPL, didn't they? It must have been. So anyway, let's go back to talking about the qualifier. Just going through the squad: Sikandaraza, Faraza Kram, Brian Bennett, Ryan Burl, Trevor Gwandu, Clive Madande, Wesley Madevere, Tinotenda Maposa, Tade Wanashi Marumani, Wellington Masakaza, Brandon Mavuta, Tashinga Msekiwa, Blessing Mzarabani, Dion Myers, and Richard Ngaraba. A team that generally picks itself. I mean, there's the two names, the brand new names, that is Tashinga Msekiwa and Tinotenda Maposa. Would you have added or subtracted anyone there?
Well, I think, like you said, Larry, this team has generally picked itself up in the last 12 months. I mean, the likes of Tinotenda Maposa, with his performances in the T10 this year and in the previous edition, it was really something that was nice to see, a young kid coming into his own at a slightly higher level and really, you know, showing that he's got the goods. So I think he deserves his call-up. Same as Msekiwa, really, I think, in terms of hitting, clean hitting, there's only a few people that I can think of in the country that can match him on his day. So especially looking at the qualifier bid, the level of competition is probably the best landing pad you want for your debutants. So I think, yeah, the selection panel there has done a good job to give those guys a chance.
And for me, I think it's nice to see that, what's his name? That Brandon Mavuta is forced his way back into contention. One of my favorite deliveries that I've ever seen live was when he bowled to Harry Tector in a match here at Harare Sports Club. And having that ability in your side is good. And also that Ryan Burl has had gotten over his injury issues and he's back into the side, I think is also a really, really good sign. It's a very, very strong team, I think.
And look at Ryan Burl as well, his weight. Have you seen how lean he is?
Richard Ngarawa is another one, I think, who's lost a little bit of weight. But it's been, the Zimbabwe coach has been, we had a couple of drinks here, I think, a few weeks ago, where we were actually sitting and watching them train. And it was really, really intense. Like, I thought it was, you know, it's a really, really good sign to see that level of commitment. And this was just before the T10 was actually staged, and so he was already preparing for his best players for these qualifiers then. And so it's good to see that a lot of guys have shed some weight and look really, really fit and strong.
And we could talk until the sun comes against. Another player I wanted to mention before I go, before we move all forward. There is a lot of excitement around Deon Myers. Do you think this is one of these where he's going to? Because as a national team player, he's been in and out and that sort of thing. And, you know, the likes of Madande, Gwandu, Nsekiwa, I could say, look, we went to these associates and won the African Games gold and so forth. But he needs that pedigree to say, look, this is a tournament. This is a match or a series that I came in and I announced myself. Do you think this could be it, or it doesn't matter?
I think it's a series that can come and go, looking at it as a stepping stone to another qualifier. So he can still come on here and play very well, and still we cannot really look at that and say this is the homecoming of Deon Myers. I think he's got a lot more to offer, especially in more competitive cricket, really. I look at that player and, my goodness, the kid is talented, and the kid has the mentality to actually go out there and be dominant for us as a country. I mean, if you look at his recent 50 in the past series, you could tell this is a player, if given enough chances, and if he takes some of those, he can become one of the players that we can really count on. We are looking at a very, very, you know, young top order, if the likes of Sikanda, Irvine, Williams are to down their twos right now. So he will be one of the better suited players to take, you know, the baton forward.
Would you have tried? Okay, you want to say something?
I'd go a little bit further than that. I'd say that for me, Deon Myers is inevitable, I think.
Sounded like Avengers, Thanos.
Because I think that he is the most exciting cricketer that Zimbabwe has produced in a very, very long time. And there's a lot of really positive things to say about Deon. He can bat, okay? He can field. And he's generally doesn't seem to have any bad habits, okay? And then he also seems to have his family is very supportive of him as a cricketer. So for me, I don't really like to make predictions about players, but I also see something about him that smells like Zimbabwe cricket captain for me. You know,
this is what I heard a couple of years ago. I'd say 2018-17. People used to say about one Tarisam Sakana. Okay, you talked about off-field habits, so it's not quite the same comparison. But why is there a tendency to fall into this sort of space where you? Everybody starts banding the C word around when they see an exciting tactic.
I think like Danton is saying, Larry, and it's funny actually, because I was just thinking of the same thing. Because if you look back at Deon Myers, the player, I look back at the T20 tournaments at St. George's, his stints in the under-19 team, his captaincy actually in the under-19 teams, where he had Wesley Madebele, Mouton Shumpa, like really big personalities there that he was leading. You could really see from a distance the aura of leadership that he has. But that also comes from what Darlington is talking about, his support system, both on and off the field. I think he's good friends with Hamilton Masakadze, who was, you know, captain for Zimbabwe for a long time. But also his parents are always supportive of him, you know, pushing his careers, both academic and sporting. So you look at how rounded his support system is. He can be that leader that can come out there and be very objective about his decision making, because he's not got any other baggage bothering him in comparison to, say, somebody else like Tarisai you spoke about. You know, he's got his off-field squabbles, he's got a few of maybe Wesley Madebele, he might have has his issues with substances. So there's always people with a bit of baggage. Deon stands out because he doesn't have most of that baggage following him.
So my question, you can carry on this, but I wanted to add, you mentioned Wesley Madebele. There's been a lot of focus on him ever since his debut, and like, you know, everybody's like, dude, Fana, you should be doing more, whatever the case may be. Does the presence of Dion Myers put more pressure on him or less pressure on him?
For me, right, I believe that good players come in twos and threes. You're better if you have somebody who can support you and compete with you at the long at the same time, as long as it's healthy. And I think, like, perhaps Dion and Wesley can do that for each other. All right, Milton is not included in this side, but he's another one who could actually fit into that, like, that mold. And I also think that Brian Bennett could benefit from that little that competition. You know, like as you Tinashe mentioned earlier, that's your Zimbabwe top order. Those names I've mentioned, maybe one other, maybe Tinashe Marumani, is your long term Zimbabwean top order. And I think just having that, like, sort of little competition generally makes, I think, groups of cricketers better when they're competing together healthily, as opposed to, you know, not having that level of competition.
So in this, you've got a rainy season out in, I mean, apparently there is threat of rain. Some days there's a threat of rain of up to 2 days, I think, 85%. Now, Zimbabwe could suffer the heartbreak of what happened with the under-19 girls, where they got to the final and were looking like they were cruising, but it rained and they just couldn't carry on playing. If rain is an issue, then, of course, the basic idea is control the controllables and not the uncontrollables. You say, look, if you're going to play against the associate side, bat first. My question, could there be a position where you think you might only be able to extract 20, 30 overs out of this match? Maximum, because of rain, that you put in a lower rank side and you bowl them out quickly and in hope of chasing them out quickly? Or do you just trust your normal processes?
Yeah, obviously, Larry, that's going to be a captain and coach decision on the day, and obviously the rest of the team and seniors will come into the decision making pool. I do agree with the idea of really being dominant and saying we want to go out there and bet first and show our quality, put this game beyond the opposition with the bat. But around the equator there, you can't really trust that you're going to get 100 overs of cricket, which means that in some instances,
well,
you're going to have
to... 40.
Yeah, you know. So in some instances, you're going to have to look at what do we have as a betting unit? Are we able to chase down, say, a 200 in 25 overs or less? Are we able to put ourselves under pressure to say, okay, we have given these guys a chance to bet first. They have labored. They've put a 180, for example, and we probably have less than 2 hours to chase it down. Who do we have around our team to go and do that for us? Obviously, big names like Sikanda, young man, Musekiwa comes into the conversation as well. And Marumani, the guys who are happy to chase the big strike rates. So it's something that the coaching department and the captain will have to be very hands-on about and make sure that they are making merit decisions. They are not just making decisions because they thought when they were here, this is going to be the plan. It has to be a moving target because you're going to be faced with very different circumstances and scenarios that needs you to still put points on the board and not fall in the same trap that, you know, the under-19 youth side in Nigeria faced, where they were really cruising and looking like they will be the one to take gold, and then rain happened. And that's going to happen many a times. So if they had put themselves in a position where they can send in their most attacking batters to try and chase down 120, try and do it as quickly as possible, maybe we could be talking about a different scenario. So it's always something that you want to not preempt, make the decision on the day based on the set of conditions that you are faced with.
And also, like,
oh, sorry. Like, to me, Tinashe, it sounds you're saying, and this is my interpretation of it. You're saying that as a test nation, we must be able to do what other sides don't do.
Precisely.
And I think this is the key idea, is what it is it is Zimbabwe turns up at this qualifier. What it is it that all the associate sides are not going to be able to do? I don't think associate sides are going to make 250 in 20 overs. So which is why I think I advocate batting first generally.
Yeah, I agree, but what I say generally, but yeah. I'm saying if there's a threat of rain, there's a, like you said, it's the decision you make on the day.
Yeah, I, and you know what it is for me also the threat of rain shouldn't materially affect your decision making processes, I think. All right. Because what it does is an 85% chance of rain is 15% chance of no rain. You know what I mean? It doesn't mean that we're guaranteed to have a game washed out because it's 85 or 90% chance of rain.
Also, it doesn't mean that the rain might necessarily be in your area.
In your area, yeah.
Because I remember when I was in Namibia, there was a certain percentage chance of rain, and they would be raining at the ground where there is across town, but not where we were, or vice versa. So,
and Larry, that's where it becomes even more important, because if you look at how structured these games are, they are going on respectively. There's a game here, there's a game there, there's a game there, and if in that area Nairobi is big, you know, if in that area there is rain where Zimbabwe is playing, and there is no rain where Seychelles and whoever is playing, they get a result there, and somebody get points. And you get your game rained out and you get 1 point, then things start to become very tricky quickly, which is why it is very important for Zimbabwe to think on their feet. How best here can we get maximum points? Sometimes he's going to be bowling first, trying to skito Seychelles for 90 and then sending Sikanda Raza Marumani and, you know, Mr. Kiwa to go and chase that down quickly. Some days it's going to be going on with your conventional betting lineup and chess and putting 220 and, you know, literally winning the game before it starts. Then you come out and try and bowl 5 overs quickly. So it's going to be something that you want to think on your feet and make sure you are always making decisions based on the specific conditions that are at your ground, because it's going to happen. We have seen that happen already, where right here at Arare Sports Club is pouring down and it's dry at Takashinga. Then all of a sudden, we are all in Harare. We've got a result in Takashinga. We have got no result at Harare Sports Club. Mm-hmm. And if you are the one at Harare Sports Club, things can become very tricky for you. 2 games getting right washed out is equals a defeat, because you lose 2 points. You know, if another team that's playing somewhere else, and this is the beauty of actually hosting a tournament, you know, they know where it always rains. You know, Kenya always know where it always rains. So what are they going to do? They're going to make sure that they play where they have the best chance of playing.
I mean, the grounds are 5 kilometers apart, so it's a little bit, they're quite close to each other. But then going into different conditions, so at Harare Sports Club, where we are here watching the Zimbabwe women, your wife is in there. Well, not there right now, but she took a wicket earlier. So it was very, very proud man sitting over here, where Zimbabwe women are chasing 153, yeah, and they're currently on 46-2 against the United States of America. Now, here you've got a pretty good wicket that you have here at Harare Sports Club. Even if you look at, with respect to some of the countries that I've gone to, you look at in Namibia, that was the Harare, old Hararians cricket, which we look at you and say, oh, is a more cricket stadium. Tyler just look at me like, bro, I love my Namibian guys. Don't get me wrong. I had a really good 2 weeks over there, but it's a different wicket. Especially the ones when I was there, not the one at the Wanderers, but the other place, the Union Ground, whatever it was called. And you could see that the ball wasn't quite coming on and all that sort of stuff. What sort of mindset do you go in there? I know Zimbabwe on Thursday are playing a warm-up match, or played at this time it'll finish, but we're not, it seems as if there was no way where the scoring was being done. But what do you go in there with? Is it you're backing yourself as a test-playing nation that whatever conditions we play in, because we play first class cricket, and so pretty much everybody, well, not pretty much everyone in there has played first class cricket. So therefore, I should be able to adapt to any conditions, or do you have to be a bit wary?
My memory of playing in, because I played at both the grounds, I think one is called Ruaraka, and then the other one is the Gymkhana. I did play at both those grounds. I found that they were slow and low. And so you generally had to be looking to play off the front foot. And then they also took a little bit of turn. But I also found that, like, genuine quick bowlers got it to actually get up and fly through. So it's just like, I think the biggest advantage we have is Ngaraba and Mzarabane. I think that is
the twin towers.
Yeah, that is the advantage that comes from having test status. You generally don't have bowlers of that caliber when you're an associate. And so it's important that they bowl well in those conditions. And not just roller, because the problem with older Aryans here is generally guys sort of turn up and don't run in and hit the deck hard. If you turn up in Kenya and do that, you get smashed. You've got to run in and hit the deck. And I think both Richard and Blessing are experienced enough to understand that. You know, as I said, I don't think getting through this is a big deal. I think it's, you've just got to make sure you smash the first side you play, which I think is going to be the Seychelles. You've got to make sure that you get a really convincing win against the Seychelles. And then I think the conditions, rain or no rain or whatnot, are going to hit everybody equally. I don't believe that they're going to just suddenly work out in Kenya's favor or in so-and-so's favor. And then if you meet Kenya, the home team, you've also got to smash them. Those are the two teams I think you've got to make sure you smash.
The first and the last.
It's the first one and the home team.
Yeah,
the first and the last.
Kenya's the last one.
Yeah, but like, but for me, it's the idea of smashing the home team and then making sure you smash, because you smash your first win. You win convincingly. You sit in inevitability in place.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, in Namibia, Zimbabwe lost the first match, and it was against the hosts. Mm-hmm. So it was a double whammy. But we talked about the two big bowlers, that's Mzarabane and Ngaraba. The third has always been Chatara, and then you've had Jongwe in there. Now, these two have been the most prolific, the two guys are out, has been the most prolific wicket takers in T20s for Zimbabwe in the last 2 years. Who takes up those wickets? I know Zarabani's wicket taking has improved in the last couple of months, but you've got a lot of wickets that have just gone out. And now you've brought in Maphosa and Gwandu and Faraz. Faraz Akram, not a wicket taker by any stretch of the imagination. Even a domestic, he takes less than a wicket a game. So I think Moore is more like a late order hitter, or maybe he's there for his economy. So what sort of combinations are you going with there?
Well, in this case, actually, I would actually want to put my head on the line here and say we might see a situation whereby Faraz Akram actually becomes a very important bowler for us in those conditions. It's going to be full of rain. There will be lots of dew in the air, and the ball might just swing because of the humidity up there. So Faraz, with the way he moves the ball, might actually become a very important piece of our bowling attack. But I look at Trevor Gwandwe and Maphosa, who both of them might not get games initially up front in the tournament. But what they bring to the table, obviously Gwandwe brings in lots of pace and good consistency. We did play together for Takashinga, and in some instances, I'm actually quite embarrassed to say this, but in some instances, I found it very difficult to keep for him because, you know, on a two-paced wicket where the ball doesn't really, you know, carry as much, you are stuck with having to make a decision either you get close or you get the ball off the bounce, which is a very difficult situation, especially if you are wanting to attack, because you want to be close, you want to take that catch. But he's one of those bowlers who can be very tricky to keep for. He gets very late movement. So if you look at that, and Darlington said this before, what is it that Zimbabwe can do that other nations can't do? They can have three out-and-out seamers that can come in and bowl very fast, very fiercely, bowl a very difficult length to put away, take 4 or 5 wickets in the power play, and, you know, ultimately kill the game. Right? And then they can also have very good batters at the top of the order, 3 or 4 batters who can come in, you know, grab the game by the scruff of the neck, put in 80-90 in the first power play and kill the game. So what is it that we must do? Exactly that. Show how we are different quality to the rest of the people that we are playing against, you know, and no disrespect to Seychelles, Kenya and them, but they don't play as much competitive cricket as we do. They don't have the structures that we do. They don't have the facilities that we do. So ultimately, we need to be able to go out there and show that difference.
I'm going to give you a line from a movie.
Okay.
Guy asks, it's from 300. They ask, well, what do you do? And the guy says, I'm a farmer. And then, what do you do? Oh, the guy is a shopkeeper or something else. All right. And then you ask the Spartans what they do. Okay. Spartans are professional soldiers. Okay. Zimbabweans are professional cricketers. It's a, and that's, that has to be the difference. You know what I mean? And I think that's going to be the side, the difference between the two sides is turn up and play as professional cricketers.
I think there's something that, Justin Simmons, the coach, said during the India tour. He says, I need to tell these guys to show them what it means to play international cricket. Like, what is the level required? And we talked about the intensity in training. So, should we say the India series was a bit of a freebie? He came in 1 week before the matches started and didn't quite know his side. Then Ireland was one of those that would attest. Is this sort of like the beginning of the Justin Simmons reign in as far as now matches are going to come quick and fast? He's had these players for a while. He's been coaching them for a while. And the talk of this is building towards the 2026 qualifier. This is building towards the 2027 World Cup. Should this be the beginning, or should we begin against India, starting with you?
Unfortunately, in professional sports, there is no free hits, Larry. There's no free hits. We might want to tiptoe around the issue, but there's no free hits in professional sport, and cricket is just like that. Right now, there is people who are talking about it, and you know, you can hear little whispers. If things don't go as well as it should be, heads will roll, you know? So, in as much as we would want to say this is the beginning of his tenure, because now he has had 2-3 months to think, look through his squad, the India series is not forgotten. You know, positives or no positives, the India series is not forgotten. I think there was more positive than negatives in the India series, but we still did lose it, as you know, many other different teams would lose to that India side.
But I guess then the disappointment was there were a couple of matches in which you could have won the series. No, could have won the series. Like, should have won that series 3-2 in reality. But there were a lot of dropped catches at critical points, missed fields and stuff like that.
And that's something that you not get out of a cricket side overnight, which is why perhaps people would be like, wait, let's give this guy a chance to say this is the beginning of his tenure. But I don't want to, you know, tiptoe around this issue. India was his first series, and we're already looking at what is it that is changing, what is it that is doing to this side that can tell us that this is the guy to take us forward. So I don't want to say this could be the beginning or it could be the end if things don't go well, but nothing is forgotten in professional sport.
So mentally, you want to answer the same question? Okay, mentally, 2023, Uganda, Namibia, whatever happened. How did a lot of these players played that series? I mean, that qualifier. And in July, a lot of them failed to qualify as well. These are players that are coming in on the back of two failed qualifications. Mentally, what are you doing there? Like, how do you get them into a position where they believe them that, you know, they could win this? Because it's easy for a situation to turn up where, oh no, this is happening again, and mentally you start collapsing.
I'm going to start by just talking about the two greatest cricketing legacies of my lifetime. Okay, the one was under Clive Lloyd, the West Indies, until the 90s. By far the strongest team on the planet. They went to Australia in 1971 or 72, and they got smashed 4-0. And Clive Lloyd went and said, he made a personal decision, and he said he's going to fight to have four quicks in that West Indian team. And from then on, they never basically lost a series until the 90s, long after Clive Lloyd had retired. And then another one is, there was another one involves Australia, they got smashed again by the West Indies, and it was Alan Border who was captain. And then they went and went through this period where they rebuilt Australian cricket. And then we end up with a situation where the record for the most consecutive test wins was 16, was as a result of that. I think you've got to... we have this wonderful opportunity on the back of those really painful losses to actually build something worthwhile. And I think a couple of very good decisions have been made. Okay? Trevor Gwandru's first go in international cricket was nothing to celebrate, but he was given another chance. And I think that's a very, very strong and assertive position, as is Maposa's selection. Taking five quicks away to Kenya, that's a very, very good sign. And also getting that leg spinner Brandon Mafuta back into that system and rehabilitating Wesley Madebele. I think that is the first steps towards what I think is a great Zimbabwean side.
A lot of that will also include a man that many people won't talk about much, Stephen Mangongo. He's been rehabilitating a lot of these players, and as part of his high performance center. And long may I think that a lot of players could benefit from that sort of system where it's more rigorous, there's a bit more focus, and that might result in some of them not leaving that $250,000 on the table. But yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Mangongo is a guy that we all know, we all familiar, we have all passed through his hands, and we know how he operates, you know. And that's one coach I know who doesn't tiptoe around basics. You have to be fit. You have to run. You have to take the singles. You have to play cricket on its merit. And I think most of the players that are going to pass through him will benefit, as we have seen with the crop that, you know, let all sevens, nines, tens that, you know, got into the national team after they had passed through him, and he was also the coach at some stage. So it's a situation whereby we are pleased to have him back. Can he still be the Mangongo that we have known? Do the crop of players that he's going to get have the ability to respond the same way that we used to respond? Okay, because the upbringing is different. The way that kids are being brought up nowadays is different. You know, some of them need a pat on the back, some of them need a kick on the butt. So you then have to see, has he, in his absence, grown as a coach? Has he also found ways to attract a player who he cannot shout to, or he cannot make run, or he cannot, you know, there is different things that players of today need for them to come through and perform. So it's a challenge for both the players, but mostly for him. Has he got the adaptability to be able to mentor different kind of players to the ones that he was used to mentoring before?
I think that he's a little bit more mature and experienced than... Well, I played under Steve as well. And I think he's a little bit more experienced and mature, and has a fuller understanding of what the work required of him actually is. You know what I mean? And I think that... I think Zimbabwe cricket can only benefit from that.
Okay. So, guys, predictions, winning all or just qualifying?
I think we're going to win all. I want us to win all. Perhaps rain can confuse things for us one or two games, but I do see the makeup of this side. We have some really dominant cricketers there. If they get going, we're going to put games out of sight, either with the ball or with the bat, whichever one we do first. This is where I almost don't necessarily agree with Darlington with the betting first idea. I am of the idea that whatever we do first must win the game and put it out of sight.
I'm always happy when I'm corrected by facts, but I still think that batting first is the way to go initially, at least initially then. But I really think that you've got the makings of a long-term, like, Zimbabwe national team in that little group of players. I think the oldest player there is Raza at 38 or 39, and then there's a 10-year gap between the next oldest player. And I think that's a very, very good sign that you have that sort of youth. But some of those younger players, like Ryan Bell, has played 100 internationals.
I don't know if you go drive younger players. Is he like 30 or something?
No, that's what I'm saying to you. It's like he's in that group. Him and Faraz and Brandon are in the early 30s. And those are the guys. I mean,
Maputo's famous
738. Yeah, early 30s. Yeah, in that sort of age.
Wellington, I say.
Yeah, and then Wellington is the other one who's got 100, I think, internationals as well. Mm. And so that's a very, very good sign that you've got Wellington. I think that Wellington is actually just reaching that age where left-arm spinners actually blossom in their early 30s, into their mid 30s. And I think that's a very, very good sign that you've got a situation where you can leave a spinner the quality of Brandon Mavuta out, or the quality of Wellington Masakadza, so Brandon Mavuta plays. I think that's a very, very good sign.
So that gives you options depending on the opposition you're playing. So your socials?
My socials are at Official Lados. I actually don't know why I put that on, but that's what it is.
that's on X. Yeah. And anywhere else?
I'm generally not on any other.
Okay.
So it's Dali_Matez on X and Darlington Matambanazo, one word, on Twitter. And Darlington Matambanazo, one word, on Facebook.
Okay. There we go. So, yeah, that's what's up. This is the Clubhouse End Podcast. We'll be giving you a podcast episode every single day. You guys will join me as and when they can. Certainly every other day during the series, because you'll be here doing commentary. So, well, if I can get one or both of them, we can have a chat. But remember, we'll be giving you daily updates in the morning as well. So go onto all our socials at Three Men on a Boat. That's All It Words on X and on Facebook. And then 3bob.com, that is on Instagram. No, Instagram. Yes, it's 3bob.com. That is all, 3 is a digit, MOBDOTCOM. 3-MOB.com, that is on YouTube, and 3mob TV on TikTok. So updates throughout the tournament. The tournament kicks off on Saturday against Seychelles. And we've got Eli over there. He'll be giving us updates. Eli's going to get us some interviews over that side. So it's an exciting coverage I'll be giving you over. My name is Larry Quiterai, and thank you once again to Darlington Matambanazo International.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show.